So this is the last Erev Shabbos of the school year. Historically, Rabbi Lapiansky uses this opportunity to speak to the boys. He's not here for this weekend, for the Shabbos. So Rabbi has asked me to share a few words with you. For the next two and a half months, you're not going to be in the framework of yeshiva. And a framework always has two things to it. A framework has tremendous advantages. It gives a person a structure to work with. It also has a disadvantage. A framework has a disadvantage that it limits you. The Chazon Ish, for example, was extraordinary Talmud Chacham in many areas of learning. Partially because he did not go into the regular framework of yeshivas. So he spent time learning Zoroyim and learning Taharis, which were not normally learned, and many of the yeshivas are not learned. But that didn't limit him because he wasn't in the regular framework of yeshiva. If you're not the Chazon Ish, not having the structure and the framework of the yeshiva would be very detrimental to the person. It helps keep the person focused, etc., because he has very clear, he has the support of the tzibur around him. Not having support of the tzibur is a very difficult thing. Having the support of the tzibur means that you're going to focus on what the tzibur is focusing on, which is not necessarily always the best thing for you. So what in the system which we're using, we have a combination of the two. We have 10 months a year where a person is given a basic structure of what to learn, how to daven, etc. And there are 2 months where you go out on your own. So those can be 2 months that I have. Well, I'm used to only relying on the structure of the yeshiva, and now that I don't have the structure, I fall apart. Or it can be 2 months where the person says, you know what? There's parts of areas of Torah which I wanted to explore, to look into, which I can't do during the year because I'm too busy. And now I have an opportunity to do that. A person says, I want to read up over the summer about Jewish history. I always found it fascinating. I don't have time to do it. I want to spend time over the summer doing that. Biographies, history. Okay, so a person has time to do that. A person wants gifter, the Shiva used to tell us, the Ben Azmanims, where for a person would take a small masechta by himself and learn the masechta. I don't have time during the year to do that. So I'm busy in the yeshiva schedule, etc. First come to Ben Azman and say, you know what? I have 2 months. I'm going to finish, take Masechta X. I'll learn with them. Nowadays, you can learn with the Art Scroll if you want. I do advise, if you do with the Art Scroll, that you review it. I do advise, if you learn without the Art Scroll, that you review it. The person does not remember, does not really get a Masechta just by learning it once. You know, I see people, they make the Siyam. They sat with the Art Scroll, they read through the Masechta. I'm not convinced you ought to make a Siyam on that. That's called learning, but if a person does it a few times, classes it over, he finishes a masechta. So he does one summer, one the next, over 4 summers of his high school career, he finishes four small masechtas and he knows them. During the year, he can make the time to review it. You can't do that during the year because you're busy. There are other things you have to do. One person says he wants to do mishnayos. Summertime is a good time to copy mishnayos. Person is interested in certain areas of halacha. He doesn't have time to look into them. Nowadays, for better or for worse, there's a lot of resources available. The challenge with these resources, it makes everybody an immediate expert. Because I can look up on the computer and I know the basic points about halacha X, and you know the rabbi says this, but I think that because it says in Google. You know, Google knows more than the rabbi, right? But on the other hand, it's a resource which allows you to find marmor chemists in something and, you know, look into it. You're always fascinated about, you know, the requirements of my tefillin. Am I tefillin square enough? Somebody asked this question today. So look into that, what that means, what the definition is, what the requirements are, how do you measure it? Talk to somebody, you know, be a little bit outgoing and walk over to a cipher and say, would you mind showing me how it works? During the year you're busy, you don't have time to do that. Summer you have time to do that. Not just in learning. There's other areas of Yiddishkeit. You know, davening. Davening is a very challenging thing. You say the same words every single day, three times a day, and it's supposed to be inspiring. Very, very few people find that inspiring easily. It's something you have to work at. You say, you know what? During the year, I'm in a rush. Over the summer, I can take my time. So one day, you know, I'm gonna actually sit and say davens and think about some of the words. I'm gonna prepare beforehand a section of Shemoneh Esrei that I want to focus on and think about and see not what only what the words mean, which I think that's a mistake that people have. The definition of kavanah is what the words mean. That's not what kavanah is. Kavanah is that the words should talk to you. That these words are talking to you. The words are saying something to you. These words are affecting you. If a person walks out of davening the same way he walked into davening, he didn't daven. I mean, let's get it straight, right? Davening is talking to your creator. Imagine you had an audience with the king. If you would be inspired by it, you were affected by it, you'd be changed by it. You walk out of the audience the same way you walked into the audience if you didn't have an audience. You didn't talk to him. So why is davening any different? If a person doesn't feel more relaxed after davening, I spoke to my creator, I discussed with him what I need, I spoke to him, I gave it over to him to deal with, and now I'm not have to worry about it. So I didn't daven. I said the words. I might get a check in my box in Shemayim. That's not what davening is. Davening is to make checks in boxes. That's not davening. You know what? During the whole year, it's very hard. Sometimes I'm not in a rush. Sometimes you might even wake up late, you know. You're not by yourself. I'm going to tell you to do that. But if you do, what's the rush? I always wanted to understand what this bracha of the Mashinim means. I like, you know, giving it to them, you know. So what is Sa'aker, Shashaber, Samager, Sachniyim, Sashpilim? What do they mean? Come on, like, how are we going to destroy them? Let's talk about it, look it up, think about it, write it down, discuss it with somebody. It's a time to use for yourself. There's areas which we're interested in. I have the following Ha'ara, where there's a halakha of saying 100 brachas a day. Where did that come from? The Mora says multiple opinions. But one opinion, the Mora says, that David HaMelech instituted 100 brachas a day. Every day a person has to say 100 brachas. And the Mora says that the story at the end of Sefer Shmuel, David HaMelech made a decision to make a minyan of Klal Yisrael. It caused the Magefa. There was 100 people dying every single day. And he was Masakin to say 100 brachas a day. And that under that stopped the Magefa. So now just, if you think about the story, it's fascinating, because the brachas that we have were instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah at the beginning of Bayis Sheni. So David HaMelech, who lived 500 years before that, is instituting to say 100 brachas a day when we don't have brachas yet. So what does it mean he instituted to say 100 brachas a day when brachas don't exist yet? So what exactly was he asking us to do? So I mean, David HaMelech asked the person, every member of Klal Yisrael, from that point onwards, every day, had to stop 100 times a day, think about what's going on in their life, and say thank you to Hashem. On his own. There was no standard nusuf. He didn't say, well, you know, no problem, you know, Mishmur gives you the calculation. You say 14 brachos HaShachar, and you say 18, 19 brachos HaShachar, three times. Oh, man. Check in the box. There we go again with the check in the box. I come to Shemayim and says, God, here's the box. God says, that's very nice. The box goes to Gan Eden. What about you? Right? Check in the box. You know, I checked off the box. That's all it's about. It's 100 brachas. They just mean to make sure that you can. I said the words. Well, it didn't work with David HaMelech because there was no words yet. So 100 times a day, the person would have to stop and think, you know what? I'm able to walk. I'm able to breathe. I'm able to see. Thank you, I'm able to talk. I like talking. Imagine that there's no bracha, which is in this, there's no bracha as far as you know, there's a bracha of able to talk. But I want to say thank you, Bresham, thank you for the ability to talk. It's my favorite activity. Did you ever say thank you because Bresham, you're able to talk? I like eating very much. So there's a bracha on the Mazarnas. How about the ability to eat? How about the ability to enjoy taste? Bershon, thank you for the ability to enjoy taste. So during the year, you know what, I'm busy. Summer, what's my rush? One day for breakfast, you know, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to push it, enjoy breakfast. And while I'm enjoying breakfast, I'm going to say thank you to Hashem for enjoying breakfast. I had a chaver in yeshiva, came from Australia. So this is in 1975. So I want you to understand the story. His parents were Holocaust survivors. They both lost a family in the war. They both had been married and lost their spouse and children. They met after the war and they married. And they had one child. So this is an only child. They lived in Sydney, Australia. The young man turns 14. There's no yeshiva in Sydney, Australia. In those days, it wasn't even really yeshiva in Melbourne. There was there was no major place of Torah learning for him in Australia. So his parents decided to send him away to Tel Yeshiva. So this woman, who's a Holocaust survivor, only child, puts her son on the plane and sends him away to Tel Yeshiva. They couldn't afford to bring him home regularly. So he didn't go home for 4 years. He had relatives in New York, but he didn't go home for 4 years. Now, if you can believe this, in those days, long distance calls were very expensive. This is before the world of fancy long distance phone calls. A long distance phone call to Australia, depending on the company, ran between $5 to $9 a minute. $5 to $9 a minute. See, he spoke home twice a year. He spoke home before Pesach and before Rosh Hashanah. The rest of the year, he wrote letters. Every Friday, he would sit down and write a letter to his parents about how his week went, etc. He'd mail it out Friday. Sometime during the week, you get his parents' response to his last letter. And this is how he kept in touch with his parents, through letters. This is not ancient history. This is the 1970s, maybe the 1970s ancient history. But for me, that's called life, you know. I went to Smithsonian a little while back and I saw the American history, and I saw the typewriter that I used in high school as part of American history. So I'm getting a little bit old, I guess. But so writing letters is like part of that, you know. After 4 years, he went home. Now, his mother's Jewish mother, right? So what does a Jewish mother do when you haven't seen your son for 4 years? What do you do when you're seeing your son after 4 years? You make him Surah, right? Surah Shlomo B'Shaita, right? Because I'll use such a lotion. His favorite steak and his favorite this and his favorite that, right? And he sits down to a repast. He has not had his mother's home cooking for 4 years. He sits down to the meal. What does he taste in that food? Shmack a steak. Really? That's all he tastes? He tastes 4 years of his mother's love in that steak. If all he tastes is the steak, he didn't eat. He didn't taste the food. He missed the message of that food. That food is not about the steak. That food is about 4 years of how much I missed you, how much I love you, how much I care about you. And this is 4 years of love wrapped into a steak. My friends, that's how you eat an apple. The Russian's love is wrapped into that apple. You just taste the apple. All you taste is an apple. That's all you taste. The brush created this beautiful, crunchy, scrumptious, beautiful, juicy, geschmack apple that you should enjoy it. During the year, I'm pretty busy to do that. Once in a while, you know, I sit there and push it, think about an apple. Enjoy my apple. I can think about, so I have to tell you, I went this week to visit Shua. Baruch Hashem, he's much better than he was. He still needs tefillos. Tefillos are being piled. When I went there Wednesday night, he was still on the respirator. Baruch Hashem, they took me able to take him off the respirator yesterday. Baruch Hashem, and he's still in the ICU unit. And you walk in, like, Ramanda's asking Shal about washing the negavasa because you can't. There's nothing to wash. Every part of his hand is attached to something. He has his tube down his throat, and his monitor's all over the walls. And he's supposedly sleeping, and the monitor keeps going off because one of them is going low. So every 2 minutes, there's this like major beep. I said, Gewaltenbelt, you know, hospitals are not made for sleeping. Don't go to the hospital if you want to go to sleep. So what are you supposed to think about that? So Baruch Hashem, he's doing better. We're davening for him. We are able to talk. He can't talk when he has the tube in. It's very frustrating, a person. He was up He couldn't do it. He had to write. I'm able to talk. I'm able to breathe. He needed help breathing. He's in a wheelchair. I'm able to walk. How many times a day do I stop and think, thank you, I'm able to walk? Well, you know why? The Silsharim says it because we're so busy. There's something called the Paro syndrome. The Paro syndrome is, Paro is worried that if Klai would start thinking about their situation, they decide they want to leave. So he made the work so hard that they didn't have time to think. So he says the first step of any growth in life is by thinking. So the solution is make life so busy there's no time to think. So once upon a time, busy meant busy. So nowadays the Yetzer came along and said, you know, we live in a society where you don't have to be so busy. You know, so he made so many different ways to be busy. So I like to follow the news. So I can sit in my computer the whole day and follow the news. Or I like to play games. So I can sit in my computer the whole day and play games. So I'm busy. So there's no time to think. Now, everybody needs to relax. And that's fine. The person tells me that he's relaxing because he spent 5 hours playing games on the computer. I said, I'm not sure that's relaxing. It's mindless, but is that really relaxing? So you might feel good at the time, but afterwards it's very frustrating. What did I do with my day? So I asked the young man after summer, so what did you do with the summer? He says, not really too much. So yeah, you feel good about it? He said, no. So I'm not giving you the Musa Shmuz. You're giving yourself the Musa Shmuz. The only difference between me and you is you wait to the end of the summer to say, and I say at the beginning of the summer. You're not going to enjoy that result at the end of the summer, and you know that. You still don't like hearing. You don't like me telling you or reminding you. So there's such a Yetzirah. Was in a conversation with a young man. He says, "Listen, Rebbe, I know my nature. I'm a very contrary person. That's the way I go. So I know something's bad for me. I won't do it. But if you tell me not to do it, I'll do it, just to show you that you can't tell me what to do." I mean, I don't know. You might know some teenagers like that. You might actually be one of those teenagers. You don't like being told what to do. You know it's not good for you, and you won't do it. But if your mother tells you not to do it, you're going to do it. Just to show your mother, don't tell me what to do. Right? We come like that, some of us, you know. So I'm not telling you anything. I'm just quoting to you what you're going to say at the end of the summer. At the end of the summer, you're going to say, you know, I wasted my summer. I wish I'd spent my summer more productively. So why wait till the end of the summer to say that? Say at the beginning of the summer, and you'll actually might use the summer well. So the summer is a phenomenal opportunity to see what you're going to do. It's your free time. Nobody's telling you what to do. You can do whatever you want. And it's such a phenomenal opportunity to take advantage of the things in which you would like to do, which are positive, and once in a while they flicker through your head during the year, I wish I understood davening better. Maybe I would enjoy davening more if I understood it better. Okay, so over the summer, spend some time learning about davening. Talking to somebody who there's a person in the shul you notice seems to enjoy davening. So ask him, can I speak to you? I see that you enjoy davening. What did you do to get you to that point? How do you get there? I would like to do that too. What would you advise me to do? Right. I see this person has a geschmack at putting on doing mitzvahs. I don't enjoy doing mitzvahs. They're power for me. So one answer is he's a big tzaddik and I'm not. End the conversation. That's a possibility. You know, I would like to be better at X. I don't enjoy doing chesed. I find chesed difficult. It's out of my box. I'm uncomfortable. I meet new people. I much prefer being in the corner. Okay, but I would like to change. I would like to grow. I want to tell you something. Personal note. I failed speech class in high school because I cannot get up in front of a group of people, like my classmates, my friends, and speak without getting so overwhelmed that I could not speak. And I made a decision when I was about 19. I said, you know, I don't want to live my life like this. I want to be able to speak publicly. So I'm going to learn how to speak publicly. Mm-hmm. I failed speech class in high school. But I said, I don't want to live like that. I want to be able to have the opportunity to get up publicly and speak. When I want. I don't do it every day. So, Baruch Hashem, it tells the Shiva where I was, every Shabbos, a Bacher spoke by the Shabbos Suda. So I went over to the person, and says, I would like to speak by the Shabbos Suda. He says, really? Like, he's always like trying to get somebody willing to speak, and here the guy's offering to speak. Now, I can't tell I was the greatest speaker in the world, can't say I am now, but then for sure I wasn't. And my first time I did it, it was very scary. And I went to somebody, I helped him craft the speech. Somebody who had been doing it for a while. I said, give me some advice. I learned some techniques of deep breathing that I shouldn't get stage fright. And I did it. And I did it again. The second time was maybe a little bit easier. Maybe a little bit easier, maybe not. But eventually I was doing it more regularly. Because I made a decision. I know where I'm stuck in the corner, but that's not where I want to be the rest of my life. So, overcome it. And I've spoken to larger crowds than this. I've spoken to, which if I think back, that's mind-boggling, considering where I was when I was 17 years old. So maybe you have something you want to overcome. You want to change. During the year, it's busy. The summertime, you have time. Dream about those things. And then make a small goal that you're going to do with the summertime that you have. So again, structure is a very phenomenal thing. It really gives you direction. The structure also limits you. So the summertime is the time to overcome the lack of structure. There's also the time and opportunity to take advantage of that lack of structure to incorporate into yourself things that you really want to do and you wish you had time to do and you wish you were doing and you're not doing. And maybe learn about how, and you could learn by reading about it, you could talk to somebody who knows what they're doing, many different ways of doing it, and then implement something practically over the summer, whether it's in the world of learning, mitzvahs, chesed, a personal goal that you have. So that's something, if we would make such a plan, and we look at the summer as such a valuable time. So then the summer, we'll say, you know what, I really was happy, I had a good summer, I really accomplished a lot over the summer. And that'll be a very invigorating summer, which will then allow you to go into the coming year feeling refreshed, invigorated, inspired, and that the next year that you have will be a very, very successful year. So I wish you hatzlacha on your finals. I wish you hatzlacha over the summer. You should use it well. Have a good show.